5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Good morning. Are you a greenie? Well, you might want to hear what opposition leader Lisa Harvey has to say about this new planning legislation that's before Parliament in WA right now. She's also been calling for our borders to be opened, but now wants all of WA to be fully operational before we even think of looking east. Also, we'll chat to a tourism operator up in Exmouth who is pleading for the government to give small businesses like hers in the regions clarity about travel restrictions. Businesses are on the brinks of collapse, and with the upcoming tourism season on hold, some are facing a total of up to 18 months with no income. It's unlikely that many will even survive unless the pollies start moving and quickly. Plus, COVID lockdown has seen a huge surge in kids on their devices. Parents, you know what I'm talking about. But how about this? New WA research is investigating the impact on babies with technology before they're even born. That and more coming up shortly.
The West Live with Jenna Clark. Brought to you by Synergy and the WA Government. Making sure no one's left behind.
Joining me on the line this morning is a pretty weary opposition leader, Lisa Harvey. Mrs. Harvey, good morning. Thank you so very much for joining us on The West Live. You had a pretty late night last night with that new planning bill passing the lower house. How are you feeling about that this morning?
Yeah, good morning, Jenna. Good morning to your listeners. Yes, I didn't get to bed till 2:45 last night. So, running on adrenaline at the moment. The planning bill was quite complex. The government really wanted to get it through by last night. So we were determined to go through and make sure that we understood what it's going to achieve. It's actually quite controversial when it comes to planning law. There are some very good things in there. I mean, it's been sold by the government as removing red tape for people to build their backyard patios and pergolas, but in actual fact, the regulations need to be drafted for that, and that won't happen for months and months and months. But what it does do is allows the Premier and the Minister to refer particular developments that they believe to be of state significance or developments of $30 million value or more to an expedited planning process.
Yeah.
So what we were trying to achieve as an opposition, and we'll have to try in the Legislative Council, was to get some accountability about those referrals so that when a referral's made by the Premier or and the Minister conjunctively, that they have to publish that in the Government Gazette and table it in Parliament so that there's oversight and people can be aware that particular developments are getting this special treatment.
Do you, I mean, you had, over the weekend, you would have had some thorough briefings by all of the industry bodies and very significant people in the building industry, such as Nigel Sudley, all for this planning legislation to go through. Did you consult people like that? I mean, he's a long-term supporter of the Liberal Party. Are you concerned that he's worried that you guys want to rush through amendments?
We're not rushing through amendments at all. The amendment that I proposed was actually already exists in the bill under the State Administrative Tribunal section where the Minister can refer and make a decision under that. So it's basically consistent terminology within the legislation that currently exists. So it's not controversial, and it's not no amendments that were going to subvert, if you like, the will of the bill. You know, it was all about accountability. So, you know, I'm sure that there's some big developers out there who, and yes, we consulted with a lot of people and we're not against this legislation, Jenna. There's some good stuff in there. But it doesn't mean that we don't do our job and scrutinise it and make sure that we understand how it's going to work and if there might be any unintended consequences.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think that this piece of legislation and these new regulations is something that the average, you know, mum and dad and you know, average plebs like me should be watching closely? And why do you think that?
I don't know. I don't know that too many people will be watching it. I think anybody who's been through that excruciating process of getting an approval for a pergola or a patio would be thinking, oh, great, well, this will change now.
Yeah.
But in actual fact, those regulations have to be drafted, and that red tape amendment might not be available for 6 or 8 months, because I expect that's a lower priority than trying to get the approvals through for larger developments that might create jobs, which is you know, while we're supporting it, you know, to be frank, if we can bring the approvals timeframes forward, we can certainly get some construction started and create jobs. But there's also some controversial stuff in there, Jenna, where there's a requirement for a whole range of planning approvals to be referred to the Environmental Protection Authority.
Mm-hmm.
And this basically is going to allow the EPA to put in place a regulation that doesn't require those referrals anymore.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
Very, very. Now, you know, for a lot of those referrals, the EPA would look at them, consider them for 28 days and say, we've got no problem with it or we don't need to be involved in it. So it's a good, you know, the EPA will drive the process. But I'm not quite sure that the Conservation Council and some of the other green groups out there were necessarily aware that that was tucked away in the middle of the bill. But
yeah.
But we, I'm comfortable with it because I think there's going to be a robust process around separating those subsidiary pieces of legislation that don't require EPA approval. But gee,
that's...
you know, we've got to be on the ball and make sure. We're not going to end up with adverse environmental outcomes out of a process like that.
That would be a massive concern, considering the government have made such a big song and dance about Row 8 and Row 9 and the Beelia wetlands, right?
Exactly. That's why we took some time with it. You know, we're not here to, and I said that last week, we're not here to rubber stamp legislation. We might be a small opposition, but we have an important job to do.
Mm.
And I've no doubt that the Greens in the upper house are going to spend a fair bit of time scrutinising that legislation, and it may well be delayed up there through no fault of the Liberal Party, but I'm sure that we'll get blamed for it anyway.
as is small governments, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I guess onto another issue that has probably been front of mind for a lot of you up there this week has been that sheep ship. How did this happen, and do you think that the processes this now gives, obviously, you have to step in and say processes around who we let into our ports has to be heavily scrutinised?
Well, I actually think the process worked, Jenna.
Really?
Yes, I do. Because from what I can gather from what's happened and from the statements of Minister Littleproud is, you know, everything happened the way it was supposed to. A couple of these people on board, as was required, were reported to have had temperatures. The view of the captain of the ship was that they didn't have other COVID-related symptoms. They just had a fever and one had a sore throat and a problem swallowing. Now, they were allowed to dock because, you know, that's the practice, but none of the crew were allowed to disembark. So the only crew that were allowed off the ship were the crew who had to do external checks on the ship. And then the Australian officers who went on board the ship went on board with full PPE protective gear anyway.
Sure.
So what's happened is they've had a suspicion that there might be COVID-19 on board. They've swabbed the people who were symptomatic and found that they've tested positive. They've been quarantined and there's been no risk to the community.
If you were Premier, would you be happy with a generic email being sent in this time of heightened awareness around coronavirus, though?
Well, I dispute the generic email I dispute the Premier's description of that email, and I think he behaved quite badly in going out far too early, creating alarm and panic in the community around this. I don't think he needed to come out as strongly as he did because it frightened a lot of people and had people very, very afraid that we were going to have some kind of, you know, pandemic, because the word Ruby Princess was thrown in there.
Mm.
And as soon as people hear the word Ruby Princess, they immediately start to think of how, you know, those people were left to disembark in Sydney and wander around and infect other people. It's just a political stunt to play on that fear. And I was very unhappy with it because I didn't think it was a very responsible thing to do. Now, you know, when they say it was a generic email, my understanding is that email went into the very agency that has been put together to manage this health emergency.
Mm. Surely.
So there's obviously a breakdown at the government level in WA, and, you know, to come out with two fists swinging, blaming the federal government for allowing the ship to dock without having the full facts on board was really irresponsible. It sent a really terrible message out to the community that they were at risk, and it's since been found out not to be true.
Surely you could have just say, fellas, this should have been a phone call, specifically from all sides. I think this is where people get so frustrated with bureaucracy and public servants, because it's like, well, this is out of our remit. Everyone else in the public service, in the private sector, is working, you know, three jobs to their one right now. Mm. Surely it should have been a phone call.
Well, I think there's been a process that's been followed here, and there was the captain had said these crew members weren't displaying signs of COVID-19. Mm. And I do believe, Jenna, that there's a little bit more to come with this story, because I find it really hard to believe that a health official working in an agency set up to deal with COVID-19 health issues received an email and didn't action it.
Mm.
You know, when you've got a ship coming from the Arab countries, and we don't know what's happening over there with COVID-19, mm. and you've got two crew on board with a temperature, that's a red flag in anyone's book. Yeah. So I think there's going to be a bit more to come with this, but I do think it was irresponsible of the Premier to come out swinging at the feds before he had all the facts on board. I think he... I don't know whether he did that deliberately to try and back in his hard border stance, where he's been getting a bit of criticism for it, mm. or if it really was a stuff-up on behalf of a public servant. And I'm reluctant to blame public servants, mm. because I think those public servants in health would be on high alert when it comes to COVID-19.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess if there's more to come on that, we'll keep across that. But in terms of, you've mentioned borders, you've been calling for them to be open for a number of days now. Mm. Why?
Yes. Well, the argument to keep the intrastate borders, the travel restrictions around WA, in my view, has not held water for quite some time. We've had no evidence of community spread in Western Australia. We've had many, many days with no new cases. Every single case that we've had has come in from an overseas traveller, a cruise ship passenger, or an interstate traveller or an immediate contact of them. So, you know, we've managed this very well. There's no evidence of community spread, and I question why we've got the restrictions on our hospitality businesses that are basically preventing them from opening because mm. they're not viable. Mm. The other issue that I've got, Jenna, is I don't understand why Broome is different to Exmouth, Geraldton, Kalgoorlie or Esperance or Albany.
Mm-hmm.
All of them have vulnerable communities. The remote communities in the Kimberley are all self-isolating. So I don't understand why... You know, the tourism businesses in Broome that are on their knees, you know, I know a number of them that have just walked away and handed their keys back to the landlord and said, we can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know, Exmouth, I've got a lot of friends in Exmouth. I ran a business up there for a number of years. And, you know, the businesses in Exmouth, they get one season, similarly to Broome. If they don't make money now, they don't make it at all. And if they've got no capital reserves, they're going bankrupt. And... You know, that they need customers. It's as simple as that. And for restaurants and cafes, they need to be able to open in a viable fashion.
Would you be open to having, keep the interstate border in place, but for the love of hot wax, open up all of these WA businesses such as beauty salons, nail salons? Look, I'm talking from, you know, personal want here, but surely if we keep the interstate border closed, we can have WA as business as usual, so we can get back up and on our feet again.
And that's exactly what I've been saying. And, you know, the annoying thing is that as soon as I start talking about lifting restrictions, mm. you know, I get slammed by the government because they try to imply that I would just want to have open slather for the whole of the world mm. to come here. And that's not the case. Mm. I'm saying the intrastate borders, you know, there's no argument. We've had no community spread. And, you know, we've got some sensitive Aboriginal areas around the state that can remain under a biosecurity hold. But let's open up the tourist towns. And yes, when it comes to the beauticians, Jenna, I'm getting a lot of complaints from people, but I also feel really sad for that industry. It's predominantly women running those businesses.
Yeah.
It's predominantly women working in them, and they're being disproportionately affected by their closure.
Mm.
And I don't understand, neither do any of the people I speak to, why beauticians are different to hairdressers.
I just don't get that. Yeah, well, I've spoken to Health Minister Roger Cook about this, and all he can offer is that he feels sorry for them. But you would imagine that you walk into those highly sterile environments anyway, so it just seems weird that you can go and sweat at an F45 class. Yeah, sure, 1.5 metres away from someone, but you can't go and get your nails done. I guess in terms of would you want to see, moving forward for the short term, have all of WA open but keep the interstate border in check for some time?
Definitely. I think that we need to start, Jenna, we have to start to learn to live with COVID-19 and understand that we're not going to get a vaccine anytime soon. It took 12 years, I think it was, to develop the Spanish flu vaccine.
Yeah.
Coronaviruses mutate, which makes them really, really hard with respect to developing vaccines, because you develop a vaccine and then the virus mutates and the vaccine's useless.
Mm.
So, you know, we can't stay locked down forever. And I'd have thought, you know, given that we've had no evidence of community spread in WA, getting WA moving again, knowing that we can be vigilant, we've got the testing kits, we've ramped up the health system. If we start to see any appearance of cases, well, we can contact trace, we can test them, we've got the hospital system set up, we've got ventilators, you know, we've got the PPE, we can deal with it.
Sure. Well, Opposition Leader Lisa Harvey, thank you so very much for getting out of bed early for us on the West Live. We hope to chat to you again soon.
Absolutely. My pleasure, Jenna. Always happy to come on. Thank you.
I guess one of those businesses that are impacted up north is Live Ningaloo. Joining me now is the owner, Sonia Beckwith. Sonia, good morning. I guess real-term facts, how much of a dissemination of your business are you facing in monetary value?
Oh, good morning, and thanks for having me on. In terms of monetary value, we had over $500,000 pre-booked for this season, and we were set to have our biggest season yet. And at this stage, I mean, I have less than $100,000 pre-booked, but I'm slowly working through the rest of the cancellations for the rest of the year, because some of those people are in other states.
Yeah.
And some are in our international clientele. So it's quite significant for us.
Absolutely. That is just heartbreaking to hear. I guess what you want now from the government, you started a change.org petition just to call for, you know, the state government to reconsider the fact that small businesses in small regional areas like, you know, Exmouth and Ningaloo and things like that, you guys haven't received a lot of the JobKeeper and JobSeeker payments and things like that. What do you want the government to do right now?
Well, we really respect the health and safety aspect, and we think that initially, you know, that things have been carried out very well. But now it would be really useful to have a quick review. And when I say a quick review, I think WA has a real opportunity to be nimble. Our population isn't as large as the other states. And I've always thought that while all of the small businesses are working hard to streamline, and just really provide real solutions for the people that have kind of missed or been slipped through the cracks.
Mm.
Identifying those issues and remedying them is what will make the difference between long-term future health of this industry and just kind of going backwards 20 years. I mean, we're really using us as an example. Only my partner and I qualify for JobKeeper, which we're really grateful to get.
Yeah.
But our seasonal regional towns that are mostly tourism based, which there are a significant population of them all around the state, all of their employees have missed out. And most all of my employees are WA people and or at least Australian. I mean, I only had one crew member that was from New Zealand, and that's it. Everybody else is from WA.
In terms of your business, just to give some context, you run the Whale Shark Tours, and it's explain the premise of the business.
We are the only small single swimming group outfit on the Ningaloo Reef. We take typically, before COVID, we were taking 10 people max, and that would allow us to maintain a meaningful interaction with wildlife safely. And now we're looking at reducing our numbers, but we're still waiting for guidance from the government on how we should be conducting our tours. Because that's the other component to this this discussion is part of it's the financial portion of things that really needs to get looked at for just past September. You know, everybody knows that the current JobKeeper isn't until September, but just a review of that and then other stimulus that could help those regional seasonal businesses is imperative.
Yeah.
But past that, just giving us some indicative dates on how the rest of the states will open
mm-hmm.
and how that what that looks like for people coming into WA is just so critical for a business like ours and for us to maintain what we're known for, which is just high quality small group tours. We can only do that with some certainty of really how to open moving forward.
Yeah. And have you received any clarity of dates from the state government around when you can resume business and when you may see interstate visitors coming back?
Oh gosh, I wish I could say yes. that really right now is the single most important issue, just indicative dates. We all know that this virus is something that's fluid and, you know, taking other countries as an example, I think WA and all of Australia has done amazing through this process, but giving us indicative dates based around solid science, I think at this stage probably is doable. And everybody knows that if things happen and dates need to be changed due to the situation, then we'll work around that. But I'm turning away people right now that are booking on my website from New South Wales and Victoria, for example, for July school holidays.
Yeah.
And I'm turning those people away to make room for WA people just in case, because I can't just, you know, run off of, oh, well, as soon as it opens, you know, I'll get bookings. That's not how it works. I mean, people right now are trying to plan for July and later.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess it is hard for you to, you're not like a cafe where you can call, you know, your supplier for the milk 2 days out. You have to get a crew and a boat ready, right?
Yeah, we do. And there's other, it seems non-tangible to people outside the industry, but there's real efforts that go on behind the scenes to deliver quality tourism product.
Mm.
And beyond that, there's a dreaming phase and a planning phase that our clients go through, and that takes time.
Mm.
So a lot of people right now are thinking about, well, what am I going to do for July school holidays? And they're ringing around and they're sending emails. And when there's confusion in the market, it doesn't make people want to press the buy trigger,
yeah.
Especially when you have people like me that are trying to be transparent and treat people the way we would want to be treated.
Yeah.
And I would want to know if a customer can actually, you know, have me in another state during that time frame. And that just makes it difficult for us to navigate and plan.
Absolutely. Speaking of, I guess, with the regional borders sort of coming off tonight at 11:59, so we'll be able to come up and see your beautiful part of the world. Have you had a lot of interest from locals wanting to come and visit?
I have had some interest. We've had two bookings since the announcement, which
mm-hmm.
is amazing,
and
we welcome those people.
Mm-hmm.
But in comparison, I've had 15, you know, inquiries from other states.
Wow.
So it's been really interesting just to see how WA doesn't traditionally like to visit WA.
Yeah.
And I'm hope and I'm that's just a
that's
known
a fact.
Factor.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, that's not uncommon because there's, you know, other people in other countries where they're not going to visit their backyard. They want to go to, you know, the Eiffel Tower in Paris and you know, they want to explore other countries
yeah.
first. And
yeah.
I'm hopeful that there will be renewed interest in visiting the backyard, because that's exactly what everybody should be doing. And I think it's really encouraging for accommodation and hospitality venues,
mm-hmm.
but for tourism operators like us, experience operators, it's going to be a bit of a tough slog because we'll probably be the last to feel those effects.
Yeah.
And we're hopeful, but the jury's still out because I'm a nerd. I go off of numbers.
Well, that's why you're a successful businesswoman, Sonia. Have you had any clarification, or what's the correspondence been like with some of the industry bodies such as WA Tourism?
Oh, I think Tourism Western Australia and TCWA, Tourism Council WA, and all of the RTOs, our local RTOs, Australia's Coral Coast, I think that they've been working very diligently and trying their best to get us some information on, you know, the where, the what, and how. But I do think that I do think that planning is actually coming from above them. It's up at the top.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're a bit, well, they can't share information that they don't have.
Yeah.
And just like me, I mean, I liken it to me struggling to write a newsletter to guests. We've been very active and even proactive on the communication front, which has been very well received by our clients and future clients. But I've been struggling to personally write an update, which is desperately needed. But I don't exactly know what to say because the information seems to be a bit clogged at this stage on how we move forward.
Yeah, it's just terrible on all fronts. But I think the good thing, on the light on the hill, is the fact that, you know, come tonight, we'll be able to head up, us locals. Too bad we have to stay home and we need to explore our backyard and have experiences with great people like you, Sonia, at Live Ningaloo. And you can check out more on your business at liveningaloo.com.au. Thank you so very much for joining us on the West Live. You take care, and I cannot wait to see you soon.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having us on. We're very excited to move forward with WA Guests. We just cannot wait to share this beautiful piece of the world with everyone.
Absolutely. Give the whale sharks a kiss for me, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you.
As you've heard, these poor people are really hurting. So do you sympathise with our comrades in the Kimberley and the Coral Coast when they're trying to accommodate for local guests, but they're also getting bookings from the east? Could this be the factor that could see the Premier open up the borders sooner rather than later? Would you book a holiday locally if you could and you have the means? Let me know at thewestlive.com.au and we'll get that back in the show. Coming up, some extraordinary WA research into the impact of mobile phones on babies while they're still in the womb.
The West Live. Making news.
Matt Tinney from Sunrise, good morning.
Good morning, Jenna. How are you going?
I am ready to get rid of this disgusting weather and head north and go and see Sonia for a swim with the whale sharks. I'm so pumped for a local holiday.
I wish I was swimming with whale sharks this morning. I've had one of those days, you know, where you just go, it would have been better just to cancel today and just stay in bed.
Yes. Yeah, I stepped in a puddle on my way in and I'm not too happy, but I guess that's just a nice little metaphor for how our
day's. Do you want to know what I stepped in this morning?
Oh, dear. Go. Oh, no.
So, alarm goes off at 2 this morning. I'll give you the abridged version of this story since we're going there. Alarm goes off at 2 o'clock. I get ready. I'm in my Ugg boots because it's freezing.
Yeah.
Then I go into the kitchen and I keep stepping through the kitchen and the family room and it's really sticky and I'm like, oh, what's that? What's going on here? And I hadn't fully connected the dots that Harry, our cavoodle, also woke up. And yes.
Oh, so, fantastic.
Yes, I stepped in Harry's business in Ugg boots, but it gets better.
Oh, no. You've traipsed it all through the house.
Well, there's that. I clean it all up. 10, 15 minutes later, I'm going, oh, I'm running late. I'm running late. Put on my work shoes. And then I always look out the front of our house in case before I go out to the car.
Yeah.
Just do a bit of a scan. Anybody
always
out on the street?
Always.
Any security risk?
You've got to be diligent.
I've only started doing that since I ran into a woman out the front at 2:30 in the morning, which was odd. But I started like almost ice skating across our lounge room in the dark. And I was like, what's going on? No, a double special.
No,
I stepped and
Harry
smeared it all over the lounge room in my work shoes. So I came to work today in my painting shoes. If you can imagine, suit pants, shirt, and
and you've done that volleys.
yeah, very old with paint all over them. So,
so not only is Harry now up for adoption, Nikki's divorcing you because she's been forced to clean all this up before she gets ready for work.
Well, I did clean it all up and I mopped and disinfected in the dark in the middle of the night. But you know what? I'm going to now have to turn my iPhone torch on and do a case the property before I'm going to be able to get ready for work.
You're going to have to get up an hour earlier.
I know. Far out.
Okay.
It was so much easier being a kid. Adulting is not fun sometimes.
It's so hard. Well, I would like to retract for the public record any of my whinging that I did this morning because you've had a much tougher morning, my friend.
Look, this is first world problems and you can only just laugh at it. Like I looked at Harry, he's sitting in his jumper because we gave him a really severe haircut and I think that's why he's getting back at us now.
True. I can't. I don't even know what your life is.
Neither do I. That's why I want to stay own bed.
Outside of your living room, what is making news in the world today?
Well, the big testing blitz starts today. This is a two-week blitz. So selected groups of people who have no symptoms of coronavirus can be tested. This is going to be fascinating, the results. We'll be able to see whether the virus is spreading undetected in the community or not. Mm-hmm. Only selected groups. So we're talking about hospitality workers, retail workers, healthcare workers, police, meat workers. So all of these people can be tested. There's different public and private facilities. There's also a drive-through facility at Burswood near Crown there. So this will be really interesting. 2 weeks is the opportunity to get those swab tests done, and we'll see if the virus is lurking. The reason those groups have been chosen is because of their interaction with other community members.
Yeah, absolutely. One yarn that I really enjoyed today is the free call for childcare after we're out of this coronavirus mess. What's your take on this?
Well, look, I'm all for it because I have kids in childcare.
Yeah.
So this is the Mindaroo Foundation's head of their early child learning area, who's former South Australian Premier Jay Weatherall is calling for the $60 billion JobKeeper service to be diverted to childcare and make it free indefinitely. I posted something on Twitter and already some people are going, I had to pay for my childcare, so you should have to pay for yours. Well, hang on, my dad got his university education for free and I had to pay for mine. So I think it would be really good. I think in having free childcare, if we can afford it, I think it's great. I think it enables parents to get out into the workforce who want to get out into the workforce rather than having situations where one parent's working, the other parent can't afford to put the kids in childcare, so they then have to put their career on hold and stay at home. Yeah. It also, of course, will keep those childcare workers in jobs because there's a demand for that service.
Absolutely.
So, interesting to see the response from government on that. We're expecting this week a decision, I know I'm invested in this, as to whether the free childcare will be extended beyond next month or whether the tap will be turned off.
Yeah, I think we should all be invested in it because there's so much research by financial consultants and things like that and analysts, and they say that, you know, every dollar in childcare is worth $2 to the economy. So get people in work and have the kids taken care of so everyone can get back to work. I think it's just such a, it's such a no-brainer. But again, that's why I'm a journalist and not a public policy writer.
Well, our kids go back, what, June 8th, so at the very least we'll get 3 weeks for free.
Good,
You know, it's a huge saving. It's hundreds upon hundreds of dollars.
Absolutely. And I think it just makes it takes the pressure off parents that want to get back to work and they don't have to worry about that bill at the end of the week. So I think it's a great call and we'll watch it very closely here on the West Live and obviously on Sunrise and Seven News tonight. Matt Tinney, thank you so very much for joining us. We'll chat to you tomorrow.
Yes, I'm going back to bed. Have a great day, Jenna.
Ditto. Still to come, why a door knocker has cops concerned. That's, of course, with Ben O'Shea in that bloody Wild West coming up shortly.
Beyond COVID.
Seven News is your essential guide for the better days ahead.
Your family, your job.
Your child's education.
Your money, your home. We'll show you the road out.
Join us tonight at 6.
Joining me on the line this morning is Professor Leon Straker, who is a professor at the School of Physiotherapy and Exercise Science at Curtin University. Professor, good morning. Thank you so very much for taking the time to chat to us on The West Live. I guess COVID, has it been at the centre of your universe as it has for ours for the past couple of months in terms of your research, and what have you found?
Yes, good morning, Jenna and listeners. And yes, like everyone else, it's been a very strange world and seen a lot of change in people's lives over the last couple of months. And I'm particularly interested in sort of how technology changes people's lives, particularly with regards to physical health. And with people working from home, with children being at home from school and trying to do schooling from home, plus trying to keep away from other people and not having the normal sort of community sports and other things to go to.
Yeah.
It's been a really difficult time for lots of families, but also some families have found some really good opportunities to do some things differently and explore new things.
I guess I think anecdotally for me, you saw so many people and families out, getting some fresh air on their bikes and having big long walks and things like that. But interestingly, I wonder, COVID, has it really highlighted issues that we have with our children and our screens? And has it brought device use to more attention to us, do you think?
Absolutely, I think, Jenna. I mean, for the last decade, you know, since mobile touchscreens, you know, smartphones and tablets have come in, where children especially, because they're so easy and intuitive to use, yeah, and you can use them anywhere and any time, that's really exploded the amount of time that children have been interested in engaging with screen devices. Mm-hmm. And that sort of crept up on us quite rapidly, but it's sort of, we haven't really sat and thought about it. But for lots of families, you know, people trying to work from home and school their kids from home and try to keep everybody happy and entertained while they're all sort of stuck inside when it's a rainy day, has really brought home to people to think hard about how they can have children engaged in a digital world, but in a way that is good for the child's physical, mental health and well-being.
We always hear about the negative impacts on gaming and technology on children. Is that true?
Well, yes and no. Playing games on an electronic device, like lots of other activities that adults and children can do, can be both either harmful or beneficial, depending on exactly what is done and how it's done. So I don't think electronic games are totally bad and should be banned from children. Mm-hmm. They're a really fun activity that lots of children and adults, for that matter, let's be honest here, enjoy spending time doing. And so from my point of view, there's no problem with them being part of every child's life, as long as the family, child and parents understand what are the dangers there and how do you minimise those dangers and get the maximum benefit out of the fun bits and the good bits of playing electronic games.
Interestingly, I guess you have been involved in the resumption or the kicking off, I guess, of the Australian Research Council Centre of Excellence for the Digital Child. It's quite a mouthful there. That was an announcement that was made by the federal government last year and it's soon to kick off. Can you tell me a little bit more about what that centre is all about?
Yeah, Janet, this is a really exciting opportunity and something that Australia will lead the world in.
Wow.
Part of the problem with this space for parents in particular in the past is that education authorities are telling them that they need to make sure their child, you know, spends lots of time on computers and things so they understand that digital world, because that's going to be what their world will be in the future as an adult, and mm-hmm. certainly what most children's lives are now as a child.
Yeah.
Whereas health authorities have been saying, essentially, you know, screens are toxic, you know, try to keep your children away from them as much as possible, and don't let them near them. And that's pretty tough for a parent to be trying to balance that from our national government, two different departments giving you quite different perspectives. Mm-hmm. So what this Centre for the Digital Child is doing is bringing together experts who have health backgrounds, who have education backgrounds and expertise and social background expertise, so that we can gather all the best evidence together from Australia around the world and provide that to parents and health professionals and education professionals, anyone that's involved in the best interests of children growing up to be sort of healthy, happy, connected, educated citizens in what is now clearly a very digital world.
One thing interesting that caught my eye that in your field of work is that you have a student that is doing a PhD into the emotional detachment when parents being distracted by screens may start before children are even born. What's how's that tracking and when will we see the results from that?
Yeah, that's a really interesting project that one of our mature age students are doing, excellent student, and she's... we've often focused on what the child is doing with technology, but if you look around at other families when we're back at a restaurant again very soon, you'll see that not only the children are spending time on screens, but they're actually they're doing what the parents are modelling, and you'll see parents doing stuff on screens at the table as well. And so I think it's important that in a family context, everybody's use of screens is part of their overall interaction as a family. And if as a family we're spending more time with the screen than we are with each other, then our family connections and will be weaker probably than that. And that really hasn't been looked at yet. which despite it being really obviously important if you look around in our community. Mm-hmm. And one of the other novel aspects of what Rebecca's doing is she's also looking at lots of parents before they have children are fairly high users of screen technology, particularly mobile screens.
Yeah.
And they use those as a source of information and social support for finding out about what it's like to be pregnant and what can they expect when D-Day comes.
Yeah.
And so she's just finished interviewing 30 families about their experiences with that. And so in the next couple of months, those results are going to come through and they're going to be really interesting because what we know is if parents have a really strong connection with their child before it's born and then after it's born, mm-hmm. that's one of the best predictors of that child having a really good outcome in terms of just about everything for the rest of their lives. So we know that's super important.
Wow.
And if we can provide better advice to families about how to use these fantastic devices, but use them in a way that doesn't interfere with their relationships with each other, but actually helps their relationships with each other, then that will be a really positive thing that Rebecca's research can do for the community.
Do you think we're going to see, specifically in Western countries where, you know, the 9-to-5 is pretty much the norm, you make the commute into your desk and you sit there for, you know, X amount of hours, do you think we're going to see a baseline shift in work expectations moving forward as we come out of COVID? Will there be more bosses taking a leap of faith, allowing those who can to work from home just so we can get some more work-life and health balance into our lives?
Yeah, I think, I mean, you wouldn't wish a pandemic on anybody, but actually I think what you just said is that I'm really hopeful that we actually have created, put ourselves all into an unusual, awkward situation and actually discovered that it can work. And I can be productive still and not be in at the office every day of the week. Mm. And so I think for both employer expectations and employee expectations, I think this really has created a whole mindset shift, which we wouldn't have got to so quickly without being forced on it.
Mm.
And now it has been forced on us. I think it really is helping people to try to think about how they can work smarter to get that productivity done, but to, you know, give themselves more time with the family so they can pick up the kids, for example, one afternoon. If they work at home one day a week, they can, you know, drop the kids off to school and pick them up, walk with them and get a bit of activity that way, but still be highly productive for their job because the economy needs us to do that.
Mm.
But to get a better mix for us to help with our relationships but also help us sort of break up our days physically to help with our physical health as well as our mental and social well-being.
Absolutely. Well, Professor Leon Straker, you've definitely inspired me to go and walk and get a cup of coffee from the cafe across the road. Thank you so very much for your amazing insights and for joining us on the West Live. We hope to chat to you again specifically about those really exciting results in the next couple of months.
Yep. Thanks, Jenna. Love to talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
We know times are tough right now, so Synergy is working with the WA government to give a hand to as many West Aussies as possible, from homes and local shops to charities and WA small businesses. From freezing household electricity prices this year to giving thousands of small businesses and charities an automatic account offset. They're also increasing assistance payments for households in hardship. They're ensuring that no customer is at threat of disconnection due to hardship from COVID-19 until at least September 30. For eligibility criteria and to see all the ways that Synergy and the WA government are ensuring that no one's left behind, visit synergy.net.au/help for you.
The Wild West.
Ben O'Shea in the Wild West. Interesting. I love this yarn yesterday that a guy who was in isolation did the marathon whilst he was in his hotel room. You've got a yarn about an Albany bloke that has spent the COVID crisis playing golf. I wish I was this guy.
Yeah, so you might think that you're not allowed to play golf. And certainly most golf courses have been closed to, you know, weekend hackers. But if you have been a member of a golf course and the golf course has made the decision to stay open, you've been allowed under the restrictions to go and play around by yourself.
Sure.
And that's what 68-year-old Lucas Sumich has done down in Albany.
I love it.
since pretty much the end of March, he's had nothing else to do other than play golf, and he reckons he's played more than 900 holes at Albany Golf Club in that time. And and the best bit is he's kept track of his statistics as he's gone around. So in those 900 holes, he's hit 18 birdies. He spotted 4 snakes, and he's lost 28 balls, including 4 off the tee at the 10th, which he's obviously having a bit of problems with that hole. But the thing I like best about
him, full 18 holes. He's not just doing 9 holes and going home.
No, he's doing the full 18. And the thing I like best about this is, and it just, I tell you what, any golfer can relate to this. So he's played 900 holes. He's played 50 days straight without a break. And do you think his golf game has got any better? It has not.
Oh, my God, I am this man. I am this man. Yeah. This is fantastic. I love it.
Exactly.
Does he usually play like a scroungers, or does he play Saturday? Like, what is he?
Yeah. He's a member down there at the club, so he plays in the competitions when they were running. And so he's been following the restrictions as they've been relaxing. So he was playing by himself, but then when they said you could play with two people, he started playing with another person, and now I think they're allowed to play with 4. So he's doing 4s. So there you go. So life is almost back to normal.
Interesting to see if his game does improve when he's got some mates sort of like sledging him from the sideline.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe that's what he needed to get motivated.
Very impressive. I kind of wish I had his life. Now, a little bit further north in Collie, why are some of the local cops concerned this morning?
See, I didn't know that the Collie door knocker was a master criminal on the loose in Collie, but it is a big concern to the local coppers. Apparently, the Collie door knocker, who's so famous that he has a nickname, has returned.
What?
He's returned to this southwest town, and what he does, assuming it's a dude, it might not be, of course. This person goes around and knocks on front doors, and if anybody answers the door, he asks for a glass of water or some name that he makes up, or says that he's lost and asks for directions. But it's, of course, just a ploy to see if the homeowner is in the house.
Oh.
And if they're not, then he probably goes around the back and breaks in. So... So cops were dismayed to hear that the Collie door knocker was back in action, and they urge anybody who comes across somebody who's behaving in that way to call them. Give the Collie cop shop a call and make a report.
For sure. Now, you've got a special shout out this morning to the Store Cafe in Pingrup.
Yeah, have you had a chance to go to this little cafe?
No, but I'm very excited. As of 11:59 this evening, we can go pretty much everywhere except Broome and biosecurity areas. So
yeah,
catch me living my best life on the long weekend.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know what? It wouldn't be the worst idea to go to Pingrup and go to this cafe before it closes. I'm telling you, I've been there. I've written about it.
Yeah.
It was set up around the same time that Form WA made the decision to put up one of the big silo murals, artworks on the Pingrup CBH grain silos there.
Gorgeous.
And the local community resource centre thought, you know, we need to have some facilities here for all the tourists who are going to be coming to town.
Mm-hmm.
So they've set up this cafe to service those visitors. And, you know, you normally have pretty low expectations of a community-run country cafe. But I was so impressed when I went there. I'm telling you, you could have picked up that cafe and plonked it in Mount Lawley, or not in Subi because it's better than all the cafes there, or in Claremont, say, and you, it would not be out of place. It was brilliant. The coffee was amazing. The food was fantastic. And it also looked the part, you know, lots of house plants. There was probably a fiddle leaf fig and some devil's ivy and all that sort of carry on.
Some millennial pink walls and Bob's your uncle.
Yeah, totally. Like it was the real deal.
Mm-hmm.
And now, unfortunately, because it's been this community-run operation, it's just a little bit too difficult for them to run it on a permanent basis. So after selling nearly 10,000 takeaway coffees and 1,500 homemade sausage rolls over the time that it's existed, they're going to have to close their doors. And so I want to just give a shout out to everybody down there at the Pingrup CRC.
Mm-hmm.
You did a brilliant job, and it was such a fantastic spot that I hope that somebody comes to the rescue. Maybe some private business owner wants to take it on. I think they're willing to look at that.
Yeah.
But it's going to close altogether come June 30, the store there in Pingrup. So everybody who wants to go down there, check out the silo art. go to the Pingrup Store Cafe, get yourself a coffee and a sausage roll and enjoy it while it's there.
Absolutely. Well, Ben O'Shea, thank you so very much for such an enjoyable trip through the Wild West this morning.
Something for everybody.
It really was. Now, I'll see you TGIF tomorrow, and you have a lovely day, my friend.
You too.
That's it from me. We'll be back tomorrow from 8:45 over on thewest.com.au/live, or catch up with us on the podcast whenever you get a chance. Have a great day. Catch you tomorrow.
The West Live. You've been listening to The West Live, brought to you by Synergy and the WA Government, making sure no one's left behind.
It's the podcast that has Australia captivated. Claremont, The Trial. We take you inside the courtroom with over 3 million downloads already. Catch up on Claremont, The Trial at thewest.com.au or where you get your podcasts.